Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
You're listening to the Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
This is Paul Hawksby.
This is Max Rushton.
And this is the H&J Daily with some of the best bits of this afternoon's show. Well, understandably, it was quite European Super League heavy, but we try to come at it from a few different angles. We spoke to Mark Makowski, who was a PR expert, who understandably thought the European Super League had not made a massively good job of the launch.
Not gone down well,
no.
Has it?
Courtney Sweetman-Kirk joined us, a familiar voice on TalkSport, Sheffield United forward, to talk about the women's game and how that might be impacted by the ESL, because it did get a mention, of course, among their launch document. Christine Green from the Mariners Trust Group, Grimsby Town fan, told us about an initiative they're doing involving shirts. And what else did we... Jamie O'Hara joined us. We talked about his old mate, Ryan Mason, the interim gaffer at Spurs. And we had a chat, of course, as much as we could with the time left. And here it all is. Good afternoon, everyone. Good afternoon, Max.
Good afternoon, Paul. Good afternoon, everybody. Yeah, I've had a couple of days to take in all the news, yeah. You know, and nobody likes change. And my first thought was, this absolutely stinks. And after a couple of days, I can confirm it absolutely stinks.
Yeah, it's not one of those things that you think, well, look, now I've had time to think about it. Mm. You know, I've had another 24 hours to contemplate all the extra information that's coming out. And, it's interesting. I think football fans are all of the same mind. It doesn't get any better,
no,
does it?
We haven't found anybody. I was on...
if we can, though, shall
absolutely.
We? I'm interested to know from you... Apparently Jazz, the Wolves fan, is about the only person in Britain, the ubiquitous Jazz, is the only person in Britain who seems to think this is a great idea. If it's him. But if you do think it's a good idea, do let us know. Call us. We'd love to have a conversation about it. And you can tell us why. You may change our minds, and indeed those of the TalkSport listeners. 08717 223 344. You, of course, can email TalkSport.com, yeah. Text 81089 or tweet to TSHNJ.
You know, it's funny. I was asked by Good Morning Britain... to
really?
Go on, and after the England semi-final, they rang me after England lost the semi-final to Croatia and said, would I come on and argue that this World Cup has been a disaster for England, right?
Yeah.
And I said, no, because it hasn't. And they were like, are you sure there's no way you could come on and say it's, you know, they really should have got, you know? I said, no, I can't. And I said, You won't, the person you will get to do, and I won't say who ended up on TV, because they have voices occasionally heard on this radio station.
Yeah.
The person who goes on to argue that England had a bad World Cup, bearing in mind they don't often get to semi-finals, is somebody who cares more about being on TV than they do about actually telling the truth. And it's the same reason. The person who comes on to say this Super League is a great idea just wants to be on the radio.
We don't know. We'll suss them out very quickly, won't we, I would imagine, from their argument. And I'm sure our crack team of researchers will see through their lies. And something that struck me is I'm being asked to renew my season ticket at Tottenham moment. I've got until June the 3rd, so I'm basically, based on what's happened in the last 24 hours, I think I've got plenty of time to decide what happens next. But what am I buying? And that's true of any of the six clubs that are involved from the Premier League. Indeed, any of the clubs that have signed up to this around Europe. What are we being asked to buy? We don't know if they're going to be in the Premier League. Are we buying Super League tickets? Are we buying Premier League tickets? I mean, at the moment, I'm thinking to myself, who's going to renew season tickets? Which is not great for those clubs who want some money in the bank. But what are we buying into?
Well, once again, they are probably relying on what these owners believe you can do, which is rely on the blind loyalty.
Now, see, I'm a legacy fan. I'm no good to them. No. I'm one of the legacy.
Cast you aside.
I mean, you've heard Florentino Perez last night. It's you know, idiots like me who rock up and pay and buy season tickets. We're the fools. We're not the fans of the future.
When are they shunting you to TalkSport Legacy? You and Andy just talking about the good old days.
Yeah.
Whereas whippersnappers like me will be like, this is, like, you know, football began on Sunday, the 18th of April, 2021. No football happened before that. Do you know what? It's interesting. I'm surprised that people are surprised that billionaires like money. I mean, who knew, right? And you don't need another voice on this radio station. I wanted to tell you that it's all about greed.
Tell you what, the phones have lit up. Some people think it's a good idea.
That's extraordinary. Should we answer them? I don't know if we should. Should we answer them and get them on?
They have a right to their opinion, and they may have a very cogent argument.
Well, why not? Actually, I'm happy to do that. But the older I get, the more I think, convinced I am, that no one really knows what they're doing in life. And there's so much bluff. So just because these people are billionaires, right, it doesn't mean, yes, they're rich and they're successful in some way, or they just happen to have been born into a very rich family or whatever. But it doesn't mean they know what they're doing. It doesn't mean they should be in any way respected. And they don't appear to have realised what kind of backlash there would be. They don't. Like by Perez yesterday, by the end, it was like partridge monkey tennis. Yeah. It was like, oh, shorter games. Oh, we'll have a Division 2. Oh, we'll just have a tournament and it will be totally different. You're just like, what are you doing? Like, how? Just because they're so successful, just because people at the top of some industry don't mean they actually know anything. I don't know. I'm just the whole thing. The soap opera and the chaos is impossible to switch off from, I find.
Yeah.
But the whole thing is extraordinary. And I feel for the players. I feel for the Liverpool players and Jurgen Klopp.
Yeah, so did I must say.
You know, and it was funny. It was funny, the Leeds putting those T-shirts in their dressing room. That's funny. But I feel for them. And I feel massively for the fans. You know, we're going to ask about changing allegiance. I feel massively for the fans of those clubs who supported those clubs through whatever.
Yeah.
Who are now, you know, the Liverpool fans must look at that Everton statement and think, I agree with every single thing on that Everton statement, and that must hurt, right?
Of course.
And you know, calling for, we heard in the news, I can't remember who was saying, you know, points deductions.
Oh, Ahmed Mashiri, wasn't it?
Yeah. But I mean, that's not really fair on the fans and all these clubs. They didn't
choose
it.
All the players.
Yeah. I don't know. It's a bit of a mess, isn't it, Paul?
I think it is, but don't worry, over the next 2 and 3 hours, we'll solve it completely.
Oh, great. I mean, I cut out a bit of the Daily Star about... Tom Jones's flatulence. I don't know if we'll get to it.
I wanted to bring you, what a band they were. I wanted to bring you news of Wayne Rooney's cigar room that he's going to have in his new house.
A cigar room.
Maybe we'll try and squeeze that in.
How many rooms do you have before you go, that'll be the cigar room?
I'd like to think he can buy Tottenham's cheese room off of them as well. So anyway, we'll be covering that. But we are interested in hearing this afternoon about the day you switched allegiances. You know, some fans of the top six may say, this is not for me. I'm not going to call them the top six because they're clearly not. Let's call them the big six, TM.
ESL six.
Yeah. So did you change allegiances and why? Have you been getting people telling us about that already?
Yeah, I've had quite a few actually. Just in terms of, you know, it's sort of seen as the ultimate crime in sport, isn't it? But just I wondered if anyone has changed their allegiance and why, and perhaps there's an age where it's kind of more acceptable. Ash says, I supported Arsenal till I was 10. I started going to Charlton matches as they were local. For my 10th birthday, my parents sent a card to both clubs. Arsenal sent back a printed postcard. Charlton sent back the card signed by the team and free tickets. Ooh. Charlton for life. Jason says, my dad grew up a Villa fan but lived in Peterborough. Sorry, Max. It's okay, you're allowed to live there.
Yeah.
Over the years, he started believing he should support his local team rather than the Premier League one. Duncan, my dad was raised a Rangers fan, switched to Aberdeen when he went to university there, partly because of the sectarian nonsense, he says. Then got a Southampton season ticket when it moved down there. So, you know,
Do you still look out for those other teams, though? You can't leave them behind completely, can you? It'd be very difficult.
But what are you thinking?
Well, I don't know. I mean, that's a huge step to take, isn't it? I want to see how this thing plays itself out and the way that, you know, hopefully the club pull back from this ridiculous position. But let's see what happens.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
This is a very timely book. On the back sleeve, it says, at a time when football has never seemed so distant from its fans, award-winning author Michael Calvin looks to the future, links to the past, and seeks to fall back in love with the game. And that's been quite difficult in the last 48 hours. His book is Whose Game Is It Anyway? Football Life, Love and Loss. Good afternoon, Mike.
Afternoon.
I mean, you didn't write that sort of Sunday morning, but it's interesting, isn't it? You do write about this sort of first incarnation of a European Super League that was discussed in the book, don't you?
Yeah, I suppose it's better to be born lucky than talented, isn't it, in terms of timing anyway. Yeah, I wanted to write the book because we've all undergone a real period, I think, of self-reflection. I think the pandemic has done that. It's obviously been private and, you know, with varying degrees of intensity. I found that the death of my father-in-law through COVID really focused my thoughts, because at that time, this is well before, you know, the events obviously of the last couple of days, I'd fallen in out of love with what football increasingly was representing, which was innately cynical, hyper commercialized, bloodless, basically. And it was when we were going through my father-in-law's belongings, we saw some fixture lists from 1932-33, a thumbnail photograph of a very young footballer, which I think it was him, but in the last couple of days of his life, we were talking to him in his care home via FaceTime, and my wife asked him about his memories of football, and there was this sudden burst of clarity. Mm. He was 12 years old again, or 11 years old again, walking through the terrace streets to the match on a Saturday with his dad, went into the sweet shop, had the anticipation of the game, and it didn't really matter that at that time Watford was a, you know, pretty moribund third division South club. It mattered to him, and it was a link with his dad and his family, and that's what football is football is family. It's not what is being presented by, you know, these monsters who are basically presenting the Premier League idea. And it is very interesting that I've been following events today, and I get a real sense today that there is now a determination for a lot of people to be on the right side of history here. Mm, mm. You were saying, Marcus Rashford coming out is, I feel, hugely significant, because he is someone who speaks to and for his generation, and he speaks beyond football. He's actually been, over the last year, the most effective, socially conscious politician that we've got. So I think what he's come up with is indicative that players and managers are realised, essentially, that their owners, they're cowards. You know, we're used to their duplicity and their hypocrisy, but the cowardice with which they're operating now tells me that there is a real move afoot. Yesterday, I was convinced this would happen. Today, I'm not so sure. Mm. I feel that there are very good people in the game who do good things in bad situations, and I write about them in the book, the people who care for young players, the people who are custodians of smaller clubs, who understand their role. Unlike the owners of the Super League clubs, they understand the importance, the cultural, social importance of the football club in its own community. And it doesn't matter whether they get 3,000 people or 30,000 people or 130,000 people to watch them. The game is the same.
It's interesting, Mike, that the book is, it's sort of part memoir and it's part trying to find faith and hope within the sport, which I think is what we're all clinging to try and find in the, you know, over these 2 days and in the last few years as well, I guess. But it isn't just, oh, it was always better back in those days. You know, you talk about things happening at Leighton Orient with Sidemen, or you talk about hashtag United and things that I would perhaps expect an experienced journalist to sort of look at more cynically. So, you know, I give you credit for that, Mike.
Well, it's the Sidemen, I'll be honest, I'd never heard of them until I'd actually been to, funny enough, hashtag United. They said, you've got to go and see what these guys do. And, you know, for the listeners, these are a group of seven guys, and they've been together for, I think, 6 years. They've got a total YouTube followership of 110 million people. Their videos have been seen by 26 billion people over the last 5 years. They've got a relationship with Leighton Orient where they actually film all their videos on the on what we used to call Brisbane Road. And that's because they're so successful, they can't go out into the park as they used to because they get mobbed. Now, these are the guys who have reached the audience that the Super League guys are looking at, but they've got much more skill and experience in that way. I spoke to a guy called Toby Brown, whose name is Toby Jizzle, which, you know, for someone of my vintage, was a bit of a mouthful to get around. But it was really illuminating to see a young guy understand what football meant to his audience, and his audience is global. And it's interesting with Leighton Orient, you talk to them there. Josh Stevens, who looks after their commercial side, came from the music industry. Nigel Travis, the chairman, fan for 61 years. He works in the corporate culture in North America. They understand it. If those type of guys were behind the Super League, I'd be more worried. But when you look at it, the people who are actually trying to put this together, I think they're amateurs.
Yeah.
You look at the branding. That could have been knocked up in 5 minutes by any
hooter. It was a bit prompter print with respect to them, wasn't it? It did feel like they'd gone down the place on the corner and knocked it up on a computer.
Yeah, and that's why, as I said, you know, there is every era has its pluses and minuses. And that's why, you know, to answer your question originally, Max, I didn't want to write this, but I was terrified of writing this book from the perspective of, oh, it was better in my day. Well, okay, you know, we had a lot of fun on the road and still do, and probably journalistically, I got away with things that would be unthinkable today. You know, going to my sports editor, David Welsh, who was a fantastic sports editor of the Daily Telegraph, and saying, oh, you know, I need to go off diary for you. I'm going to sail around the world. You know, they'd have laughed at me if I said that today. He allowed me to do so. And that was a huge life experience, but it actually taught me a lot about reaching people. And I think the great thing about this controversy is perhaps this is the time that we will reset. And that was the hope that I carried at the end of the book. You know, I made the point that football's about family, and it's ours. It's not theirs. It's not these plutocrats. It's not theirs. It doesn't belong to them. It belongs to everyone. Everyone who's listening to this show now, it belongs to you. It doesn't belong to them. Football is a highly individual, very personal thing, and if by reading the book people are reacquainted with that and perhaps reintroduced to people who are doing good things in bad situations, I'd be really happy.
Excellent. Yeah, there's some great, apart from that, there's some very good stories of your tales on the road as a journalist. And it's very much Michael Calvin, the moustache he is.
Oh, yeah, what a moustache.
Oh, my word. You
can very much enjoy the
slight... Eat your heart out, Tom Selleck.
We wish you well then, Mike. Thanks for joining us.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
Jamie O'Hara, our very own. Good afternoon, Jamie.
Afternoon, Let's. How are we?
Good. How come you didn't get it, Jamie?
Because I've done so many radio shows with you, Max. Yeah.
Fair enough.
Are you? Look, it's a bold appointment. They say he's a Tottenham man. He loves the club. What do you make of it, even though it's an interim one?
I mean, it's a strange one, in my opinion. You know, a week before a final to sack a manager that's, you know, the master of winning finals. You know, look, the writing was, you know, on the wall. You could see in his press conferences over the last couple of weeks, he looked like he'd zoned out. Even watching the game the other day when things weren't going his way, he just wasn't really getting involved in it. So, you know, you could see, you know, probably why they've come to the decision. It's a different one. I thought they might have had someone lined up. I thought they might have had something, you know, to happen straight away and go into that final with, you know, sort of a real sort of new era. But to give it to Ryan Mason, look, it's great for him. Incredible opportunity, 29 years of age. And, you know, to say that you've managed Tottenham Hotspur is incredible for him. I just don't know if it's a little bit too big of a job. But, you know, in the fact that, you know, it's a huge end to the season we've got.
I think he's going to lift the mood. I've got to be honest, as a Spurs fan, I was quite pleased that they'd made the change. I just think the mood around... We'll find out tomorrow. We may play like drains, but I don't sense that. I think you'll see a few players come in that you've probably forgotten existed. It was still on the books. And,
well, I think that's what's going to happen, right? Yeah. I mean, Danny, I wouldn't be surprised to see Danny Rose back involved. It wouldn't surprise me if Bale and Dele Alli start. You know, we play a sort of attacking-style football. And, you know, I know Ryan... You know, it played that sort of way with Pochettino. I played with him myself. He was that sort of dynamic midfielder. So, you know, I think that's probably straight away we will go into that. But, you know, it's all right setting up a team and going out and doing it and saying we're going to play this way. But, you know, to be a top class manager like at Spurs, which is a huge job, it's more than just putting a team out there, you know?
I do think a lot of Spurs fans right now are really clamoring to try and find some reason to love their football club, right? They're in part of that six, aren't they? And just on a personal level, for what happened with Ryan Mason, what happened with his career, for the Spurs fans to think, I can go into that game tomorrow night, I can go into that game on Sunday, and perhaps I'm furious with Daniel Levy, and I'm furious with my football club, but I have so much respect for him and what he has been through that you can almost make this like, I'm supporting him on Sunday. And I think that'll make a difference to a lot of Spurs fans.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, look, we're all behind him and we all want it to go well for him, of course. It's fantastic. Great opportunity for Ryan. But, you know, let's not get away from the fact that Spurs have been a shambles, right? Let's not get away from that fact that the whole European Super League, which has just been an absolute disaster PR-wise, then to sack the manager on the same day that basically comes out, you know, two massive things happen again when... You know, the football club is trying to just be, you know, trying to get into that sort of bracket of being, you know, a Manchester United and a Manchester City. And we were there with Pochettino. We had that sort of solidarity with the squad, with the manager. It wasn't changing hands all the time. And now I'm just looking at it going, what are we? What is our identity? Like, we're trying to be a big six club that we don't deserve to be. You know, we're sacking managers a week before a cup final. You know, that for me isn't what Spurs are about.
What would the you know, given what we think we understand about how much, you know, how many players, you know, Jose had upset and how he, inverted commas, lost the dressing room, would there have been like a massive buzz around amongst the squad and amongst the WhatsApp group when they hear that this manager that most of them didn't really like had gone? Would they be buzzing about this?
I mean, some of them, yeah, I guess. I mean, you have to look at it and say, you know, people like, you know, Bale and Dele Alli and, you know, players that have not and hardly features, Danny Rose, who, you know, they will be probably rubbing their hands together going into the training ground the next day and you go, right, fresh start for me. I mean, that happens. I've been involved in it. A manager gets the sack, you've been cast aside, and then the next day you come in and bang, you're in. You're training with the first team again, you're involved, and, yeah, you've got something to prove again. It's a clean slate for everyone. But you can't get away from the fact that these players have underperformed. You know, Mourinho's given them chances. They've had chances to play and they haven't performed. And as much as you'd say, all right, now you can blame the manager for the tactics and playing a sort of negative style football and it's defensive, which, yes, we did. At the end of the day, these players done this to Pochettino and now they've done it to Jose Mourinho. So where does it get to the point where it's on the players and not the manager?
Yeah, and indeed the board who are making these appointments. Anyway, Jamie, good to talk to you. We'll catch up with you soon. Thanks very much.
All right, take care, lads. See you later.
I do like the idea that if Danny Rose is kind of the Jesse Lingard of Tottenham, is that he's absolute peak fitness. He's like a cord spring, and he goes on at left back tomorrow night and looks like he did alongside Kyle Walker.
I'm absolutely delighted, yeah. And I'm getting so frustrated with the football and everything, and I wanted to play all the attackers.
He said we're going to be on the front foot and aggressive. Like the Tottenham team. So we'll see. Southampton. I wonder if Southampton boys, you know, if I'm Ralph Hasenhüttl, I'm saying this lot think they're better than you. The players might not, but the chairman does. He thinks they're Super League and you're two Bob, if whatever that is in German. So go out and stick it to them. As we saw that last night. We saw that with Leeds had a real sharpness about
them. Everybody was supporting Leeds yesterday.
Everybody's going to try and stick it to those six teams, and it's not the fault of the players or the management, but anyway, that's not going to change things, is it?
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
So you would have noticed in the statement from European Super League clubs, tucked away there, after the start of the men's competition, a corresponding women's league will also be launched, helping to advance and develop the women's game. Well, we can all say that, can't we? It's much like the whole thing. It's quite light on detail. The kind of reaction really from people who know their women's football said it's always a bit vague and feels like a bit of an afterthought.
Absolutely.
Let's speak to a current player and, of course, familiar voice here on the Talk Sport, especially on Friday evenings, Sheffield United forward Courtney Sweetman-Kirk. Hiya, Courtney.
Good afternoon.
The first thing that comes to mind is a lot of people have been asking about the teams that should be in a Super League, like Bayern and PSG. And it does strike you in women's football, how can you have a women's Super League without sort of Wolfsburg and Lyon, for example?
Yeah, exactly. I think, you know, Lyon, they've won it the last five times. So, you know, if you're thinking there is a team to be in there, it would be them. But I'm very much still of the feeling that the whole situation, both for the men's and women's side, I think, quite frankly, it's vulgar, it's greedy, and it's something that I don't want to see in the men's game, and I definitely don't want to see it in the women's game either.
And Paul's right, it's such an, you know, the whole point of pushing women's football to make it not just an adjunct to men's football, to make it, you know, it is a sport within itself. Nothing seems like at the end of a meeting going, oh, blimey, we better just say something about the women's game in this, you know, and just tossing it in
it
there.
I mean, like
it's
that,
so, yeah. It makes you so angry that.
Exactly. That's exactly what it felt like to me. It was a tokenism of, well, we've not put anything in there about the women, so we best stick something in there. Just so we don't get a bit of a backlash, although obviously the backlash already has been massive. So it's a token afterthought for me, and something that I don't think anyway will advance the women's game. I think we've got to look, you know, for if we're talking about the UK and England and closer to home with the WSL, the disparity in our league is still, you know, terrible, for want of a better phrase. We are getting there and we are going forward, and I'm so pleased about the Sky and the BBC deal, but very much I think it'll only widen the gulf. The disparity first in the Super League between the top and the bottom teams is huge, so we need to start addressing that, and then also again between the WSL and the Championship. So I hope that none of these clubs in England want to be involved. I obviously know it's up to the hierarchy, and that's where it gets interesting for me, because, you know, you've seen so many managers and players come out on the men's side and in the last 24 hours saying they're opposed to it, but ultimately it's not that decision. And, you know, the clubs that hold the power and very much hold the money for the women's side, where does that leave them? Do they, you know, if they're in it, do they have to go in it, or do they say, right, if you don't go in the Super League, we're going to pull your funding? So I think, you know, the overarching thing for me in the last few hours is the fact that how the, you know, the players and the managers have been treated, and, you know, less privy to the information, and yeah, it's just very strange and very sad.
Yeah, and just at a time where, you know, last week we're talking about the 10th anniversary and we're looking at the strides that women's football's making, and the broadcast deal that you mentioned, this idea that, you know, it will normalise the sport for young boys and girls watching, that it's, you know, it's just a sport that can exist and function as of itself. And this, I don't know, it just, I mean, amidst all the vulgarity, this is such a, you know, the fact this is such an afterthought, it really just, it irks me massively. That's not a question, Courtney, it's just a rant, I guess, of many rants that we've all
statement,
done.
I agree. Yeah.
And if you
totally
look at, if you look at the sort of meritocracy angle on this, I mean, a team like Liverpool, I mean, we weren't even in the Women's Super League, were they? So the idea that they would be at the top table of women's football is sort of pretty ludicrous, really.
Yeah, this is the thing. You've got, you know, Liverpool, and I've been a part of that and been quite vocal about how at times the club treated the women's team that frankly, in my opinion, wasn't good enough. You've got Spurs, who have only just gone into their men's training ground because Alex Morgan, one of the biggest players in the world, for want of a better phrase, had a bit of a kickoff. And on the note of Spurs, I think the audacity of Spurs, who have never won a Premier League and haven't won a trophy for the best part of 12 years, to say, you know, they think they're part of the big six. And again, that's me going off on a tangent. That's a different matter. But I think, yeah, when you look at these clubs that the women's side that are attached to it, they don't treat their women's team in the right way at times. So then to put them into the Women's Super League, and I think we've got a long way to go in England. And I think today they've come out about the referees now in the WSL and the Championship being attached to the PGMOL. Like I said, we've not even got full-time referees in our league yet. So, yeah, to then shoot it up to the sort of European Super League standards, I just think it will be a case of, again, the richer get richer and the rest get left behind. And again, it's only the Championship and the Women's Super League that have been playing for the last few months. Everyone in the third tier and below, there's not been the funds or the help for them to continue playing. So we need to sort of get our own house in order first before we attach ourselves to anything like the European Super League.
Yeah, very good point. Susie Rack writing The Guardian saying Liverpool have built a new training ground with beach volleyball courts, but no room for their women's team. So, yeah, you know, they should, if there is a Super League, they shouldn't be there, should they?
Anyway. Courtney, we'll leave it
there. Courtney.
Good to talk to you. Thanks very much.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
The launch of the European Super League has been something of a PR disaster. It's hard to believe. Maybe they'll use it in you. Let's ask our next guest. He is a PR expert, of course, of long standing, Mark Bukowski. Good afternoon, Mark.
Morning, chaps.
Well, they.
Afternoon,
I wonder if they will
even.
Be. Afternoon. Yeah. I mean, they, you do wonder whether they're in a PR school in years to come. They say, let's look at a really bad example of how to do things, considering the amount of cash and jeopardy involved and the knock on effect. But you must have been looking on from a distance thinking, what a mess.
I mean, a disaster. And I've commented on a few, whether it's over the years, but I don't think I've seen anything so incredibly damaging as this. Someone pointed out that many of these rich individuals who are running these franchises don't really care about bad publicity, and maybe not for them, but they're completely hubristic. They're completely in a bubble because they don't care about fans. And if you don't understand the fans, if you just understand business and franchise and huge amounts of money coming in from merchant banks and investment types, that's where the problem lies. I mean, not only you've got the problem here, the communication problem here, you've got a communication problem in Italy, you've got a communication problem in Spain, because again, you're ignoring the fans in those territories as well. And it was like a huge nuclear bomb drop where I think the news leaked and everybody devoured this story. And still the Dirty Dozen, these Marvel supervillains, have yet to say a word. So the vacuum is building and everybody's piling in. Every pundit and every news channel is having their own opinion on how appalling this is. I mean, you've got the Prime Minister of this country saying, we're going to create legislation for this. You know you've got a deep, deep problem.
I mean, there is a phrase that I can't really say at this time of day, but, you know, it involves something you can't polish, but you can roll in glitter. Can you take a bad idea that most people will hate and do it well? You know, could they have done this in a better way? What would have been, if you were put in charge of this, what would you have done? Apart from say, don't do it.
Yeah, of course you could do it in a better way. But you've got to align your supporters. You know that this is going to be a war. There's going to be a series of battles you have to win. You've got to win the fans. You've got to win governments over. You've got to win the government ruling bodies over. So who is there to support it? So first of all, you run out a series of supporters in each territory. You align messages. You obviously do briefings with individuals. You know, people like Micah Richards, who is an ambassador of Manchester City, is completely in the dark. managers, players are exposed. So first of all, you've got to have a strong communication line on what this whole thing is about. And you need people to communicate it. You need to synchronize launch and you need to get your facts straight. And if you are people who don't like going in front of a camera, be it, you know, Roman Abramovich, you know, or the Glazers, who are not very popular with their own fans, Roman aside, he's very popular with me as a Chelsea man, but anyway, not so much now. But the bottom line is you've got to have a communicator, and you don't want a vacuum. This is the worst possible result of this, is a vacuum that you're not filling. And already the Times reported an hour ago that there are one or two clubs now who are part of this dirty dozen who are splitting apart. So you've got innuendo, you've got, you know, facts that are not straight, but you need a strategic coordinated alliance of people who are supporting this, pull them together and actually have them as your spokespeople if you are not willing to.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.